Welcome, I'm Samantha Diliberti, founder of the social impact hub, Orange You Going, and this is Progress Through Purpose. Progress Through Purpose helps you discover issues you're passionate about, like the environment, social equality, affordable housing, and more, and makes it easy for you to affect change while connecting with like-minded New Yorkers in person. Learn from experts working on the vital issues impacting the largest city in the U.S., and hear the solutions they propose. Then meet us in person. Join the OG Squad, a community of changemakers who meet to affect change together. Build new friendships, expand your network, and advance your career through civic engagement, all while uplifting our city. Learn more about the movement at orangeyougoing.com. Hey, OG Squad, thanks so much for tuning in. Today, we're joined by Zach Fink. He is the Director of External Affairs at the firm Davidoff, Hutcher & Cintron. And prior to his role, Zach was a longtime New York political reporter at Spectrum News, where he covered New York government and politics. Zach, thank you so much for joining us today.
Samantha, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
So today we're going to talk about New York state government. What we know is that the New York State's legislative session has started back up. It started back up in January. But can you explain for listeners what that means? What is session and what should New Yorkers who want to learn more about state government, what should they be looking out for this year?
Sure. So the legislative session is basically the time of the year, runs about 6 months from January until June. And that is the time in which elected state representatives, both in the Assembly and the State Senate, are in Albany for part of the week where they craft a budget, for example, which is due at the end of March. And then they also work on standalone legislation that affects the 19 million people who live in New York State. The Assembly is a bigger, larger body, each individual member representing certain neighborhoods in New York City, for example, certain parts of upstate and the middle of New York as well. The Senate have slightly bigger districts. There are fewer senators. There's only 63 of them. There's about 150 people in the Assembly. So the Senate is a smaller body, but senators, you know, technically have a little more power, I think, than the average Assembly person. And they're not really in Albany any other time of the year other than that period. So anything that they need to do for the state, for their individual districts, must get passed in that time frame. So there's a lot of bills, a flurry of bill activity at the end of the legislative session in June, when they are kind of in a scramble to get all the bills that they need to get passed before they leave for the year and go back to their districts. Legislators are much more happy to be in their legislative districts back home. That is where they deal with their constituents, the people who vote for them, the interest group that help get them into that position. They prefer not to be in Albany all that much. And it's a limited session in part for that reason, but also because it was originally set up as a part-time legislature where they were expected to also have other jobs in the private sector. That has come to not really be the case as much as it used to be, certainly when this was originally established, you know, a couple hundred years ago. Now, most legislators are full-time legislators.
There's been a lot of news around the governor's state of the state and the budget. And can you talk a little bit about what those two things are? What is the state of the state? And then how does the budget process for the state work?
Sure. So the state of the state is basically the governor's opportunity to speak to a joint session of the legislature. That means both houses and the general public now, because it's televised, or at least it's, you know, live streamed on the website. The governor, he or she, lays out what they consider to be their agenda for the legislative session in Albany. As I mentioned, it's a shortish period of time and they want to get right to work. So the governor says, these are my priorities. These are the things I would like to work on. And the first thing that they do is that they put together a budget. A budget is described very often to me as a statement of priorities in terms of what you're funding, in terms of what you're advocating for. New York has a budget each year that's about more than $230 billion. That's, you know, bigger than most states and cities. It's one of the largest in the country. So a lot goes into that. You know, I mean, a lot of the budget is taken up by education, healthcare, debt service, but then there's a bunch of discretionary items, and that's kind of the issues that everyone is fighting over. People are fighting over those scarce resources, not only for their districts, but for causes that they happen to believe in. So the budget is really the first order of business, and that is due by the state's strange fiscal deadline. Don't ask me why this is, but for some reason, the fiscal year in New York State starts on April 1st. Most states do it either in a calendar year or June 30 is very popular in the Northeast. New York State, for whatever reason, has a fiscal year that begins on April 1. So the budget must be crafted and voted on by both houses by April 1st. You know, I say must be. It almost never is. The budget is almost always late. There was a period of time under the previous governor whose tenure ended in scandal where having on-time budgets were a big priority for him, and he made sure that we had, if not on-time budgets, timely budgets. So it maybe be a day later, maybe they'd be voting overnight into April 1 or April 2. Hochul last year, I don't believe they had a budget until May. And that's really much more commonplace historically for Albany, that the budgets get delayed. They basically pass a spending package that keeps the state functioning. The state never shuts down. They don't allow that really in Albany. They pass what's known as an extender. They keep everything in place as it is until they're ready to come, you know, all sides are ready to come together and agree on a budget deal.
Can you explain a little bit? You mentioned this idea of shutdown. We've definitely heard that term used at the federal level as well. But for listeners who may not be, you know, government employees, can you explain what that means, that the state never shuts down?
Yeah. So in certain states, and certainly, as you mentioned, we've seen it with the federal government, if you don't have the funding in place and you don't pass an extender to keep things functioning, a government can shut down, which means that non-essential services, you're not talking about police, you're not necessarily talking about emergency workers of any kind, but non-essential employees, which is not a very nice term, but basically what it means is, you know, state workers no longer get paid. That's it. They don't work. They don't come in. They don't get paid. Parks that are state parks are shut down because they don't have resources to keep them open. A government shutdown can be a very ugly thing and can, you know, directly impact people's lives in a very negative way. If a state the size of New York were to shut down, it would be a pretty big earthquake here. And, you know, not only putting people out of work, but depriving the public of basic services that they need.
Very interesting. Glad we have not experienced that. So you mentioned that, you know, there's a finite amount of money, though New York State does have a very large budget. Legislators, the governor, everyone's fighting over how it's going to be spent. Can you talk a little bit about what that means? So the governor puts out her proposal. What are some of the next steps in terms of how the budget is finalized? There's, you know, advocacy from the legislators, but how does an average New Yorker get their voice heard, get represented in this budget and these negotiations?
So it's a good question. Let me start with the first part. So the governor, about a week or so after the governor lays out the state of the state and where things are and what the priorities are, in this case, Governor Hochul introduces her budget. And those are basically her spending priorities. You know, here are some of the programs I want to support financially. She submits a very kind of thick book document with her budget to the legislature. The legislature then holds a series of budget hearings where they look at each and every department in state government. Those hearings are held throughout the month of February, part of January as well. And they do them one by one. I mean, sometimes these hearings go on for 10 hours and they go through it. That's their job as legislators. They have, you know, charged with the responsibility of oversight of state spending. This is taxpayer money. We should remind everybody, this is what people pay in taxes that, the individuals in Albany, the representatives are charged with spending, and you trust them to be, you know, safeguards of that money and stewards of that money in a responsible way. So the legislature goes through it. For example, the first budget hearing was held in January. They took a closer look at health and what we're spending on that. There's a local government hearing where mayors from across the state come and ask for for money from the state. Usually the New York City mayor kicks that one off. Education is always a big hearing that you know a lot of people pay attention to. So they once they go through the process and they have these extensive hearings, the legislature then comes up in about mid-March with what's known as their One House budget proposals. So the assembly will craft their own budget and they will pass it. And that will be, it's not meant to be a final budget. It's meant to say, here is the assembly's budget. This is our answer to the governors. We want to increase funding in, let's say, education. We want to decrease funding for this program. And the Senate does the same thing. They craft their One House, usually again around mid-March. And then once everybody's kind of put their cards on the table in terms of what we want, the three leaders go into a quiet room out of public view, and they attempt to hash out a final budget deal where everybody gets a little bit of what they want and loses a little bit of what they want. And they come to something they can all agree upon. And then ideally, that final budget agreement between the Senate majority leader, the assembly speaker, and the governor is then voted on by both houses. And I was going to say signed into law by the governor. Actually, fiscal bills, just because of a quirk in the law, they don't actually have to be signed. They automatically take effect after they're voted upon. But the leaders try to have an agreement in place before that voting begins. So for the average person, you know, we go on a system in which we trust that our elected representatives are going to represent our interests. Last minute deals do get made. Legislators are sometimes asked to vote on things that are unpopular. For example, several years ago, they passed what's known as congestion pricing, which is charging vehicles to come into Manhattan below 60th Street. That's going to be a very high toll. So people in, say, areas of New York City like Staten Island, who are going to get hit with an extra charge, were very unhappy, but their representatives voted against it. Same for parts of Brooklyn and Queens. But they were able to muster enough votes to get it over the finish line. And a big trick in state government, and they do this all the time in New York, is they will create a big bill for the budget and tell lawmakers they have to vote for it. And it contains some things that they like and some things that they don't. So the average person is really represented by proxy by their elected representatives. You trust that your person is gonna do right for you and advocate for your community. Sometimes they don't, and they get voted out.
So really just highlighting the importance of voting, which we will touch on a little bit in a little bit. So you also mentioned that the state is funding city and municipal governments. I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit just about the kind of symbiotic relationship between the local governments and how they're getting funding from the state governments.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the state government, certainly New York, the way Albany was set up is that, you know, all the power really resides in Albany. Most municipalities across state, including New York City, they don't have the power to raise taxes. They don't have the power to change their own speed limit. These are all things that have to go through Albany. So when I mentioned that flurry of activity at the kind of end of the legislative session in June, what they're trying to do is crank out all the local bills that they have to do affecting municipalities all over the state. Albany likes it that way. Albany likes to keep the power in Albany. It likes to, you know, have the mayors come and ask them for funding, and they like to control the purse strings. And, you know, Albany could conceivably govern all of these municipalities if they wanted to. They could govern the city of New York. You know, the city of New York, again, doesn't have its own power to make a lot of these changes. And Albany arguably did govern the city of New York in the fiscal crisis in the 1970s when it ran out of money. And Albany established the Financial Control Board and basically said to the city, okay, you messed this up so badly, you're no longer in charge. We are. And they had to step in there. So, yes, to your point, the municipalities are very reliant upon Albany's largesse and upon the, you know, the taxes that come through Albany to fund their various programs and you know, don't rely solely on local taxes for that. They also need state aid, particularly with things that are big like Medicaid, which provides healthcare for those who can't afford it, It's a government program and education. You know, a lot of municipalities can't just, they don't have the rateable base, the tax base among their residents to pay for their own system there. So they need help from the state.
While you were talking, it just kind of reminded me of something that I always find surprising and kind of forget about, which is that the subway, for example, is actually governed by the governor, right? The MTA is under the governor's purview, not the mayor's purview, even though you would, you know, you think of the subway, you think of New York City.
Exactly right. I mean, the MTA board controls the MTA. It's a quasi-independent agency, but you're right. The state has the most members on that board, so they control it. City has appointees, but the state is technically in charge. So, for example, during COVID, the MTA and the New York City subway system lost ridership in huge numbers, and they have yet to recover from that deficit. And so it's the state's responsibility to find funding sources to not only make sure the system functions on a day-to-day basis, but that they can have money for their capital plan. They need new subway cars. They need new signals. They have to keep the system in shape because it's the lifeline of New York City. You can't have a functioning city the way we do down here without a subway system that is robust and gets people to where they need to go to work, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In terms of what some of the priorities are for this session, are the priorities different year over year in terms of what the governor lays out, what the different houses lay out? What are some of the priorities that we're seeing for this year that have been outlined?
Sure. So yeah, they do change year to year, but of course there are some that are holdovers or that get revisited. I mean, for example, the governor last year proposed a major campaign to build more housing. It was giving the state the ability to override municipalities with their local zoning. And what that means is municipalities had to come up with certain housing plans and meet certain targets. And if they rejected plans, the state could then say, no, sorry, you have to do this, even if your town doesn't want it. Well, that did not prove very popular, as you might imagine, in the suburbs. And what it wound up doing, it was so controversial that it tanked the entire housing plan, because there were all these other things that she and the lawmakers wanted to do. They wanted to create incentives to convert office space in New York City to affordable housing. They wanted to renew a tax break known as 421A, which enables developers to for it to make economic sense for developers to build affordable housing. They didn't renew that. Members of the legislature wanted a tenant protection bill known as Good Cause, which would add additional protections for tenants and prevent them from getting evicted and give them automatic lease renewals. The whole thing fell apart. They could not come to terms, and they left Albany without doing anything. So this year, it's come back up again. The governor has significantly reduced her ask on housing so that she's not doing that controversial program of overriding local zoning. But all the other things are still in the mix there. She wants to do the conversion. She wants 421A. She's, we don't know if she's open to tenant protections the way the legislature wants them, but I would imagine if they reach some sort of grand bargain, that will have to be a part of it. So that's a holdover issue from one year to the next because it didn't get done last year.
Well, so if we could pause on that for a minute, I think it's a really good example of kind of what you were explaining in theory before, which is the governor put forward an idea. Some maybe local municipalities had issues with it, communicated to their state electeds, who then those state electeds went and advocated on their own and, you know, put their own ideas back into the, it sounds like what, their own house budgets.
Yeah. So I think in this case, it was even more extreme than that. I think the local legislators went back to the governor and said, we're not doing it. Forget it. You know, it was we're not doing your big housing proposal. And if we can't agree on the other stuff, we're not doing any of it. And it wound up being a pretty ugly fight because I think there's widespread agreement, you know, among all parties, you know, Republicans, Democrats, and certainly people who consider themselves more in the progressive camp among Democrats, there's definitely agreement that affordable housing in this state is a huge problem. There's not enough of it. And it's one of the reasons people are leaving New York State in very big numbers. We see a lot of out migration from New York State. It's affordability. It's, you know, some say it's the weather. It's a lot of things, but a big one is lack of affordable housing. And you can't just have housing for the very rich and housing for the very poor. You need housing for all income levels. And that is an area where New York State really, really lacks the kind of progress it needs to have been making these last several decades. And for them not to be able to come, you know, to come to an agreement on this is unfortunate, is very unfortunate.
Well, it sounds like it's back on the table again this year in different form. So we will see what happens. So if the budget is due on March 31st and the legislature is in session until June, what happens for the rest of those months?
So after they come up with a budget, you then have a lot of opportunity to reach deals on other bills that are of significance or importance. Like I mentioned, there's a lot of local bills, stuff that is non-controversial. Someone from Monroe County needs to, you know, set up a new traffic light, or they want to change the way the water authority bills its customers. Little things that have to pass both houses, but are not necessarily high on the priority list. But in June, there are always a number of issues that come up. I mean, for example, this June, mayoral control of New York City schools is expiring. It's expiring on June 30th. Every couple years, they've been doing extensions of mayoral control, which gives the mayor kind of accountability on the schools. The previous system had school boards, and there was a lot of corruption. It was a total mess. So under Mayor Bloomberg, they changed to the system of mayoral control, which gave the mayor full authority and accountability over the city's school system. But again, this being Albany, they don't just give mayoral control and say, okay, good luck, we'll see you never. You know, they say, we'll give you mayoral control, but it's going to expire every 3 years. And you're going to have to come back up here and make your case as to why it should be renewed. So that's expected to be a big fight in May and June, because there are a lot of lawmakers who feel as though the mayor's not doing a very good job with the school system, and they may want to try something else. So that's the kind of thing that you hear about in the second half of the session. It doesn't generally get done in the budget. That tax break I mentioned for developers, 421A, that expired 2 years ago in June. That was something they were supposed to renew in June and just didn't. So, you know, maybe that gets kicked out of the budget. Maybe that's something they try to get a deal on. Big pieces of legislation can get passed in the second half of the legislative session. The issues vary from year to year, but then there are some common ones that come up every few years, mayoral control being a very good example.
So if the average New Yorker who, you know, doesn't work in government, wasn't a reporter, wanted to be better on, you know, follow what's happening in Albany, do you have any recommendations for how they could do that?
In terms of learning about Albany and how the system works, you know, unfortunately, there is not a lot of daily coverage. I was a reporter for many, many years, and I covered Albany. And the ranks of the press corps that cover Albany have shrunk dramatically. So there are reporters who are assigned to Albany, but it tends to be a lot of, I mean, look, it's worth reading, I believe, but it tends to be a lot of horse race coverage, which is like, you know, the politics, the fighting, the behind the scenes, the deal making. It doesn't do a lot of, you know, kind of explaining the process and how it works. However, I would recommend this podcast because I think it's very informative as to how the system actually functions. I was up there a long time. I learned something new every year. You know, I mean, I was in that place for a long time, and every year I learned of some new authority or a new way that they do business there. I mean, it's a very complex, you know, layered process of how things get done in our state's capital, and it is not the most transparent place on the face of the earth.
Although I do see many bills coming through trying to change that. So there are folks working on that piece of it as well. So after session ends in June, we have a lot of elections coming up. Can you touch on what New Yorkers should be looking out for in terms of campaigns and elections this year?
Yeah, sure. We have a big election year that's coming up that in this calendar year, 2024. All the members of the legislature, every single state senator, every single state assembly person is on the ballot. They get elected every 2 years. And they're up for re-election this year. Congress is the same way. Congressional representatives are up for re-election every 2 years. It's an even year, so they are all up once again this year as well. There is no election for governor this year, but there is an election for president. So that will be what they call the top of the ticket. And that could impact some of the down ballot races. So, you know, New York Democrats, for example, are hoping to win back some of the congressional seats that they lost in the last election. Democrats in the state Senate and Assembly are hoping to maintain their super majorities. Super majorities means you control 2/3 of each of the respective houses. And so the governor, in some respects, you know, has a lot less to worry about this year because she's not up for re-election and the legislature is. So that could impact how willing she is to compromise her values and what she wants, because they're the ones who could potentially pay the price electorally when people go to the machines in November.
A lot to balance. So for any listeners who want to make sure they are registered to vote, want to learn where their voting places are, et cetera, you can just Google the New York State Board of Elections website, and that will have a lot of information there. Zach, thank you so much for your time. This was really informative. I hope our listeners enjoyed it, and we look forward to talking to you all soon.
I enjoyed it too. I hope they did as well. Samantha, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Get the most of Orange You Going, New York's social impact hub. When you join the OG Squad for free, you receive event notifications curated to your interests. Never miss a change-making event. Orange You Going to be there?